You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
And I have wine, and Leo's here, so we're good.
We got wine, we've got Leo, we've got Michael. I think this is an excellent Dots, Lines, and Destinations on the road.
It is excellent, and it's a beautiful day in London.
It's a beautiful day in London. We're sitting out in the backyard here, enjoying some rosé on a summer... Not as sunny as I thought it was going to be. It's gone a little overcast, but it's okay. My tan will have to pick up in Nassau next week. But Michael Traeger of TravelZork/what else?
TravelZork, ZorkFest, all the Zork kind of things.
Anything going with Zork in it, except the original Zork game. You didn't actually create that, right?
No, I didn't. That has nothing to do with me. It's all. But
it has nothing to do with you except having inspired all the names and
life. It did inspire some of the names, but also it inspired an easy URL, and I like easy.
There you go. That must be why you like me so much, because I'm easy.
Yeah. I don't know. I've heard.
I should stop drinking.
That was after one bottle of wine. You want more bottle of wine? We'll hear more about that. Easy around the world. Is that the new hashtag?
We'll get to the next bottle of wine before that episode is done, I'm sure. We're hanging out in London. I'm in London. You live here. I happen to be passing through, and thought we'd catch up. We had you on last year at some point. Was it Memorial Day?
I think about a year ago.
Yeah, it was just over a year ago. It was Memorial Day last year. All three of us were in town, and this time it's just me, but looking forward to catching up on where you've been. And I pulled the microphones out because we got started talking about other things and started going down a rabbit hole, and I wanted to capture some of it on air. But smoke and mirrors is, an interesting turn of phrase and suggests a lot of challenges. I'm not sure the right word to come up with here, but the idea of sort of not quite deceit, but close. And what we're talking about, flying on BA. And we were flying on the 777s and the new Gatwick fleet. This came up because I'm tomorrow going on the Heathrow to Nassau flight, which I love as a line, the fact that it exists in general. But
which I assumed was Gatwick, which I didn't realize they moved back to
Heathrow. Yeah, and so I think it was Gatwick at one point. But so we started talking about the Gatwick fleet, and the Gatwick fleet of 777s has been retrofit.
Yeah.
And I think it
they're all sparkly.
Yes, brand new and sparkly. So that is that the smoke or is that the mirror? I guess that'd be the mirror.
I think it's a little bit of the smoke and mirrors. But yeah. In the AV geek world, we're always very critical of any 777s that become 10 across in economy class because
absolutely.
That is one of the
evil.
Evil experiences. I think Delta is still 9 across.
Delta is still 9 abreast and has said...
Oh, United's 10 abreast, though.
United is moving to 10 abreast. Delta has said they're not going to do it without further statement from the people I've spoken to there, but sort of choosing to not disagree with me when I've suggested reasonings. There's two reasons for that. One, some of their routes are sufficiently long that adding the extra 20 or 30 seats could become a problem. Joburg to back to Atlanta is pushing the limits of the 777, even the LR, a little bit. And so if they want to do it without weight restrictions, adding the extra seats, right? Why would you add seats just to block them off?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's spending a lot of money for no good reason. And then the other reason is their fleet of 777s is only about 20. And so it's not over the course of, the whole fleet over the course of a year, it's not that many extra seats to sell.
Gotcha.
Versus a United that has 70-something 777s, or an American that has a bunch, or Emirates that has 100-something on
which
them.
Makes a lot of sense, because I've seldom been on a Delta 777 being in Europe.
Yeah.
And when I was in Amsterdam, I was mostly flying the Boston route, and Boston was A330s and 767s, depending on the time of the year. It was usually once a day A330. Sometimes it was twice. It was either twice a day A330, and then the second interval became an A330 and a 767. As we know, Delta at London Heathrow is mostly 767s up until a couple months ago. It was exclusively 767s like a year ago. And I think I flew Delta once on a 777 out of Amsterdam to Detroit. It was Selena Gomez weekend at Mohegan Sun. I remember, it's so funny how I place these things, but we flew Amsterdam, Detroit, Detroit, Hartford.
And, as one does.
And I was totally tracking that 777, and it was pretty much so empty in Delta One, or I think it was Business Elite back then, and then they had a cancellation that day.
That's how it filled right up.
So it totally filled up, so I was stuck in economy class. So the only time I think I've ever been on a Delta 777 was in economy class with my daughter. That's and I survived. I mean, it's been impacting me for a couple of years.
You seem much more, you know, adjusted and stable now.
It's just a credibility thing. You know, there was no good, you know, there was no good Facebook pictures or anything I could do because I was in economy class on a 777 to Detroit.
Didn't even have the empty middle seat next to you.
No,
that's the only face.
Packed.
I feel like that's the Facebook brag you get out of economy class travels. Like, no, but the seat next to me was empty.
Well, I do that with Euro. Intra-Europe club.
Because
Europe is about half the time that I either am upgrading because I want the tier points and the upgrade is inexpensive. I wind up having an entire row. So I think we've probably argued about this a million times. Like, it doesn't bother me that much because I feel the upgraded food and beverage and the fact that I'm usually getting an empty row is like a better experience than, you know, American Airlines in first class on a 737. But that...
And I disagree with you. I mostly disagree with you because I think the legroom matters. That said, the U.S. carriers are shrinking their first class pitch, not down to the same 30-inch Eurobiz levels that, you know, BA is running, but it's not the same 38 inches it used to be. It's 34 to 36-ish now or whatever, not 40. It's down to 38. It is getting a little tighter in first as they try to optimize. There's air quotes, scare quotes there, cabin layout. So, I don't know. I flew over here in BA coach today and desperately needed a nap on board and got it, but not without some pain in my knees as a result. That experience with my knees tucked into the seat in front of me and pretending that that's a premium cabin is hard for me to explain and hard for me to accept, and I really don't care about airplane food.
I bought
my own.
Even
in Oslo, where things are very, very expensive, I bought a meal in the terminal, and it was okay. It was on par with it, whatever I'd get on an airplane, certainly within Europe, and I paid $15 or $20 for it because it's Oslo and everything costs that much. But like, if I'm getting the same legroom anyways, I get lounge access through status anyways. So to your points,
when I'm doing an upgrade for 80 pounds, 90 pounds, 100 pounds, I'm looking at the tier points that I'm gaining.
Yeah.
For me, I like to travel less. So hitting the 1500 tier for BA Gold, I'm taking that into account. And to sort of an entry into that story is my miserable experience at American Airlines, which I did not have to have out of Las Vegas.
I never would have expected a bad experience on American.
So I decided when I finished Zorkfest in Las Vegas that I needed to get back to Boston to move my daughter out of boarding school. So I really wanted an afternoon flight, a 2 or 3 o'clock flight. So I took the American Airlines flight from Las Vegas at around 2 p.m. to Charlotte, connecting to Boston Logan from Charlotte, getting in around 11 o'clock at night, which seemed like a decent idea. 2 o'clock is, like, to me, a normal time. I don't do morning flights from Vegas.
Especially to the East Coast, there's like a 6 to 7 a.m. bank and then nothing useful until 1 or 2.
Right.
I feel like just because of the time the flights arrive and you want, like, an 11 o'clock departure would be acceptable, but 6 or 7 is not.
Right. And my option, my real option, I wasn't sure about my tier points at the time when I booked it, because my tier year ends in July.
Okay.
So I said, okay, well, if I book on American and I booked a discounted first class fare, I know I'm going to get my tier points, even though Charlotte isn't like the maximum amount,
isn't enough.
The perfect flight for maximizing tier points. So I did that. But of course, I could have flown on JetBlue Mint.
Right.
But the Mint flights were at 7 a.m. and 10 a.m. They have Mint to Boston on the...
From Vegas?
From Vegas, yes.
I thought Vegas only was getting JFK Mint. Interesting.
So Vegas is getting Mint 2 flights a day.
Okay.
Except, amazingly, the flight that I think really needs it, the Red Eye,
doesn't get Mint.
Yeah. So I said, okay, I should do Mint, but it's 10 a.m. And it worked out wonderfully because I was like up the entire night.
Right.
And doing my whole casino thing and all that stuff. So
well,
I was...
You have been working for 3 days, so you finally got to gamble.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was hanging out looking for different advantage play opportunities at Caesars and other places with a friend. And it was just one of those very special Vegas mornings. So anyway, so I took American.
Read more about it on travelsork.com.
Yeah, if I decide to write about it.
If he shares.
But anyway, so I took the flight at 2. Of course, it was delayed. They had some delay, some issue out of Charlotte that day with security or something. So the flight was delayed out of Las Vegas to Charlotte. We got in, and then it was delayed once we got on the plane. So we were arriving in Charlotte late, but just late enough for me to be about 15 or 20 minutes from my connection. So we landed Charlotte, and there were weather situations. And I kid you not, we sat waiting for a gate for 45 minutes in Charlotte. Ooh. Of course, at that point, my Boston Logan to my Charlotte to Boston Logan flight was pushed another half hour. So I'm like, we're actually cool. Like, yeah, everything's cool.
Everything's
until cool. We were waiting for 45 minutes for a gate. So that's the first problem.
Was this one where you were waiting for the gate that was your onward flight pushing back to clear for you to pull in? Because I've had that once.
No, it wasn't
that. The worst connection ever. I was like, oh, I'm going to make it. Oh, shit, we're actually blocked by the plane that I should be on. I'm screwed. That was a great experience.
So I got there. I said, okay, now we're just, everything was fine. There was a half hour between the, that we landed, between the time and the delay, there was a half hour. I'm like, I'm going to be fine until we're waiting. And then it's 5 minutes to the new departure time. And I get off the plane, and it was only a couple of gates. I'm great. So I go there. They scan my boarding pass. Of course, it doesn't work. So we've offloaded you. I'm like, oh.
Thanks. But I'm standing here. That doesn't seem very useful.
Yeah, and I've been waiting for a gate for 45 minutes, if you didn't know. So they were actually pretty accommodating, and first it was like you're here. I'm like, shit. Wow, you guys really don't have data that you share between each other very much so. So I was like, yeah. So then they put me back on. I was in I don't like the bulkhead row. I was in 2A. They moved me to, I lost my window seat. I think I was in 1D or something like that. But it was fine. I was still in F. I got on the flight. Of course, we then sat there for another hour. And more people are coming on.
I'm impressed they got you back on.
I was impressed they got me back on. I wasn't impressed we sat there for another hour.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense to me that you would offload somebody. And then the flight didn't actually have pilots. So they had offloaded, or something went wrong. And
why do you offload before you're actually ready to close?
Yeah, that's what I didn't really understand.
I actually had this problem with Continental way back in the day, where there was huge delays. The inbound aircraft diverted to Stewart, upstate New York, for a Newark departure.
Popular Norwegian airport.
Yeah, it's very popular Norwegian Airlines. If you're like 737s across the Atlantic, that's the place to be.
I like empty 737s across the Atlantic.
And my friend got, there was terrible weather, this and that. My friend was a little late to the airport, but she got stuck in a check-in lane. And the line was too long and she had a bag to check and whatever, but she couldn't get to the front in time. And by the time she got to the front, they're like, oh, sorry, you missed the check-in cutoff. And she texts me, I'm sitting in the lounge at the time. She's like, they're telling us we can't get on the plane, this and that. And I'm like, I'll be right there. So I left my wife in the lounge. I went outside and I raised a shit storm. Finally found a station manager. Was like, you need to call someone at the gate. You need to fix this shit. But they basically, the flight was overbooked anyways. And so when people missed the cutoff, even though we were delayed 90 minutes, they used the original cutoff time, offloaded everybody and cleared all the standbys.
Wow.
Or cleared all the oversolds into seats. It wasn't even standbys. The station manager did us a solid and she called the gate and yelled at the gate agent while I was standing there listening. It's like, and these three people, we actually turned out two other people were supposed to also be on the flight and they heard me yelling and they came over and joined my party. I got them all on the plane, but they're like, she's called. She's like, I don't care what you have to do. Take VDBs, like bump people. But these three passengers are getting back on board. You screwed up. And it ended up being like a $600 or $800 bump. And I was so tempted to take it anyways, because it was a lot of money, but it was like the next flight wasn't until next afternoon. And we were just going to Vegas for the weekend. So I've had that same experience.
Well, so we finally get to Boston and it's a little bit before 2 a.m. now. So I'm like really tired. And guess what would happen when we get to Boston?
Wait for a gate.
They've got nobody at the staff. And then we get to the gate, and it takes them 20 minutes to get someone to the gate to move the jet bridge, which, once again, I'm honestly, and maybe I'm biased, and I flew these years on Delta, but, you know, the way that I see Delta operating is like someone would be running to the jet bridge to actually get the jet bridge to the plane because it arrived and do it. And this just seemed like nobody was really that concerned that it was almost 2 a.m. and there was nobody there to hook up the jet bridge. Well, then finally, after 20 minutes, we deplane. Of course, I've got my 3 75-pound Zorkfest bags, which I know. Now, here's the interesting thing. You know, the baggage tracking is wonderful. Yes, I'm tracking them in the ACK, and I see they're sitting in Charlotte. Of course, the plane sat for an extra hour and 20 minutes.
At the gate. Yeah.
So there was actually no reason why they couldn't make it to Charlotte. But it gets better. There was actually another Boston flight before my Boston flight, which was delayed after my Boston flight. So supposedly they were putting those bags on that plane.
The quote unquote later flight that was there earlier.
So I get to baggage services and it's now about 10 after 2 a.m. Oof. And I have a reservation at the Logan Hilton Airport, so which is really convenient. And my idea was to go get the rental car, bring it to the hotel, even though it cost me a little bit more for parking, just so I can go drive out to Western Massachusetts the next day. So I'm at baggage services and they say, and this is great. Baggage services is like, we're pretty sure it's on the next flight that's coming in the next hour or two. I'm like, great. They're like, so you should wait around for your bags.
You go fuck yourself.
And I was
two
like,
in the morning, I
was
not
like,
waiting.
It is now 2 o'clock. I'm like, let me explain this to you. A, I'm in revenue first class, albeit discounted.
Sure.
I'm One World Emerald. And you're telling me, they're like, well, you have to understand, sir, things do go wrong sometimes. And I'm like, a lot of things have gone wrong today, but I think a lot of things actually were in your control not to go wrong today. So I said, I basically said to the I said, you have an option. I said, you can deliver my bags to me to the hotel, which is like a half a mile away.
Yeah. You could actually just walk them over there. And
yeah, you could deliver them to me in the morning, or I'm on BA214 tonight on Friday night. You could put them on BA214 to London, or option number three behind the third window is you could just get them to London somehow. So the first woman, it blew her mind. They had to get the supervisor. And I said, I'm not waiting here. This is insane.
Meantime, if they'd stalled you just a little longer, they might have
won. This was my fear. That I honestly believe, because it took the supervisor 20 minutes to come out. I said, they're stalling me on purpose. They're going to keep me here till 4 a.m. until the bags arrive. Just so, and then, of course, think about it. It's now going to be like 4 a.m. I've got 3 75-pound suitcases, and I got to get them on a bus to the car rental terminal. It's like, yeah. So finally, I convinced them. He says, okay, we're just going to send the bags to you in London. I said, because, oh no. Well, he said, we can't deliver to Hilton. I said, why? He's like, because it's not enough time. We need the whole day tomorrow to be able to deliver your bags for you. I said, fine. Well, I'm driving out to Western Mass and I'm coming back. I said, fine. I said, then here, I live in London. Here is my address in London. I'm moving on to London.
You're
so that's where you need to deliver them to my home address, I guess, because you can't deliver to me in Boston. So they took all of that information. I went on my way. Didn't follow up on it at all, because my American Express European insurance, if my bags are delayed 4 hours, I get 500 euros to spend.
Nice.
So now part of the problem here is that one of those bags, they weren't all 75 pounds, a little bit of exaggeration. One of those bags had bags inside of bags to use for my daughter
to pack up
for school. So now I have no bags. So what I did is I went to Target and I bought all new luggage and everything.
So you actually used the 500 euros. This wasn't pure profit.
Yeah, well, I actually needed bags to be able to pack her up for school. And then I will say it was, as usual, I mean, two things. One thing, and I can't say this enough, when people say, does it make sense to have status with a car rental? Yes. Okay, yes. Let me just say yes. I have a picture at 2:15 a.m. going, and I booked a luxury sale with British Airways that included revenue first class from London Heathrow to Las Vegas, and then I did the American flight to Boston, and then Boston back to London Heathrow. Really good fares, like 2,300 pounds, all booked in first with rental car.
Including the American ticket?
No, not including the American
ticket. So it was the open draw to Vegas from Boston, plus the rental car, and then the middle segment was separate.
Right, and okay. I could have done business cheaper, but I mean, it worked out nice. And my daughter was booked on that same flight on BA214, which is the late flight out of Boston.
Right.
She was in World Traveler Plus on like a 400-pound ticket of that segment on World Traveler Plus, which where I was able to upgrade her to club on with Avios. She complained a little bit because I was in first and she was in club, but she got over it. This is kids.
Sorry, there might be some eye rolling going on.
There's a lot of eye rolling going on. So I didn't follow any of this up because I had no patience anymore. But we got to, it was a pleasure. But when I got to Avis at 2:15 in the morning, I went immediately to the Avis Express area because I knew my name would be on the board because I missed my car pickup.
Sure.
And the Avis Express area was closed. So then I came back out to the regular Avis area. The line, not exaggerating, had 40 people in it.
Ugh.
So I went right to down the side and I said, I'm Avis President's Circle, which I get through Amex.
Right.
And they're like, then you're next.
Yeah.
So huge, huge. If I had not had that and I had to wait in that line, I cannot imagine how long that line was.
Yeah.
On top of it, I got the best Pimp Daddy upgrade. I got like this brand new GMC, bigger than the Escalade, you know, with everything, with the vibrating seats. I don't know if you've been in those.
Why would I mean, okay, I'm going to now just go back to like 1970s, drop a quarter and you get a vibrating bed, shitty motel situation. What do I want a vibrating seat for?
Well, this car had two features which I had never seen before because I don't drive cars very often. One, it had a heads-up hologram of the GPS. And it also had your speedometer. But then if you got too close, like you go through a Dunkin' drive-thru and you're getting a little bit too close, your seat starts to vibrate to tell you you're a little bit too close.
It's the lane violation.
Yeah, your lane violation vibrates you. It's really sort of cool, but a little creepy.
My new car just flashes on the screen in front of me. But
well, I'm telling you, the vibrate is really cool. But
so what you're saying is you're sort of driving the line a little bit, enjoying the ride?
Yeah, it was great. But that was really great. But I have to say, if anyone ever talks about car rental status, you don't need it until you need it. And this was one situation that had to have at least easily saved me 45 minutes. And they treated me really, really well with that. And then, of course, we got back. I packed my daughter up. We had more than enough time. Talking BA, you wanted to talk BA. BA at Boston is the bomb, okay? There is no comparison. I don't know how much you've been in Terminal E lately, but they added that new wing with the new lounges.
Excuse me. Yeah, I actually have been in that new lounge. I was flying Iberia that day, and I checked in, and they told me to use something else. I'm like, but I can use the BA lounge also, right? Like, oh, yeah, you can use that one too, which is bizarre to me. I really think Iberia, by default, and I was in business class, used a different lounge than the BA lounge for some reason. I really think they did. They were trying to send me somewhere else.
That's right, because Cafe uses the
BA lounge.
BA lounge.
I think Iberia uses like the other sort of generic lounge in that terminal. Also, the Iberia flight is a 5:30 departure, which is way too early to go across the Atlantic, and it's before dinner was put out. Supper. Now, I didn't have, and it wouldn't have been dining anyways, because that's only for BA Club, I feel like.
Well,
the restaurant, right? Isn't the meals only for Club?
Well, the BA lounge now, they have a what I would consider in the realm of U.S. lounges, spectacular, like buffet area.
Okay.
And they have a beautiful bar that has a
the
view of
bar
Boston.
Is
I mean, that
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
And they board from the lounges.
Yep.
But is Iberia boarded from lounge? Or
no, I don't think we did.
It ticks off a couple of boxes for me. One, the lounge is beautiful. Just the ambiance, the overall bar area, and the view of Boston is amazing. The fact that you board from the lounge, to me, solves a huge problem, because I'm always convinced that airlines lie to you about when you need to go to the gate for boarding. And you always feel, you know, like a wanker getting to the gate so early. They say they're boarding, but they're really not boarding. So you've left the lounge early, and you're... like path to Heathrow, but that's you get to the lounge early, and you leave the lounge early, and you get to the gate to board, and they're not boarding, so you feel like an idiot just sort of standing there to board. So the whole pre-boarding from the lounge is phenomenal. But then they have a separate dining area, which has a bunch of single individual tables for people traveling alone, which is the Concorde Dining that looks over the tarmac.
We're literally on the flight path. Sorry.
Yeah, I know.
I'm looking at flight radar right now. That's, by the way, what you just heard was the BA-297 service to O'Hare. It's an A380 operated by XL tonight, XLEL. The dot is pulsing and the line is literally right over us. So we got 3.5 minutes until the Beijing flight gets here on a 777. So,
okay, well, we'll listen for that one. You see, this is really becoming a very interactive kind of episode. But the lounge is great. I had done Concorde Dining there once or twice before, but this was really nice because my daughter and I got there. We had a couple hours in advance. BA has three flights on Friday night. One is around 7 o'clock, which is A380.
Okay.
And then they have a 777 around 8:30, and then they have the 10:30-ish flight. It might be 10:20 that we were on. It happened to be that the middle flight, the 777, went mechanical that night.
Oops.
So they were putting everyone on the A380, but they knew it early in the morning.
So they could move some people early.
They moved A380. So our flight, I was like, oh, can we change to the middle flight? They're like, there is no middle flight because it's too full. It's dead. So our flight was very, very full, but we were there a couple hours in advance, and obviously the only people who can use Concorde Dining or those traveling first. I'm not sure about Gold Guest List. I think they might be able to.
If on BA Metal, they should.
They should be able to, because it's not, but it's weird.
It's technically not Concorde
Room,
though.
It's Concorde Dining. But, you know, it was really nice. My daughter loves rare, like, sashimi tuna, and we did a sashimi tuna appetizer, which was great. We shared some of the lamb. The champagne was the Laurent Perrier non-vintage, which was very nice. I had one or two nice red wines. And then on top of it, the coolest thing they did is my daughter is a pretty simple eater. She likes like burgers and the tuna. And they had burgers on the buffet, but the burgers on the buffet had cheese and bacon, which to a lot of people is great, but not to my daughter.
Sure.
But they made her special slider burgers and all. I mean, I've got a whole bunch of pictures, but it was extremely gracious, wonderful service. The people in the Boston Lounge are wonderful. And then we went and we just sort of rested up and relaxed a little bit before the flight and boarded. And I got her set in 10A, which was pretty easy, full flight. I was in 1A, and I got to say, this was one of the best Boston crews that I've seen in the last 2 years. It was a worldwide crew, really, really good. But what they did is they keyed in on is, like, they had an appetizer, which is the Balak salmon with caviar.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm just going to have double of that appetizer and a glass of champagne, and I'm going to bed. They got that to me within 15, 20 minutes of taking off. I had changed in my pajamas before taking off. What?
demerit points for that.
Why?
Well, you have to evacuate the plane. You want to be in your pajamas?
Why not?
Okay.
Okay. I don't. Is that the demerit? Yeah, but yeah, but it's one of those things. Boston to London.
I know there's no other time to do it. I get that. I want pocket so that my cell phone and my passport are in my pocket and my shoes are on during takeoffs and landings. That's just, it's a mild obsession of mine. And it comes down to, it's never going to happen, you know, knock on wood, but when it happens, what am I going to look like when I evacuate the plane? I don't care what I look like, but I want to have my stuff in my pockets. So that's the only reason I say that. But
yeah, and actually that's a really good point. But, you know, to me, that's just another time thing. So
it is a time thing. Absolutely.
But I finished my double appetizer. I went back to check on my daughter. They made up the bed. 4.5 hours sleep. My daughter got 4.5 hours sleep. Great flight. Great breakfast.
Best you're gonna do out of Boston.
Champagne. Yeah. And on a 10:20 flight, you have breakfast at 10 in the morning. So it's
I'm actually booked on that flight, the late one, in October.
Okay.
I've got our conference in Athens. So I've got a seat booked. The return half of my flight to Nassau, which I think started this conversation 20 minutes ago.
Smoke and mirrors.
We got to get back.
Would it take an hour? So the actual thing about it is
you're worse than my mother, by the way. I love that about you.
I know it is true. but you know, when I flew to Las Vegas on BA, it was a 747 from 1990.
Okay,
you look that up. It's not the high J.
It's the old config still.
I think so.
So the shitty IFE.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. World Traveler Plus is like tiny little screens. Yeah.
You can tell if it's the new IFE, it's been retrofit, and it's actually the new IFE.
Well, I can't tell because I'm in first. It all sort of looks okay in first.
No, even in Clubber and first, the IFE is shit on the old ones.
Well, I have to say that my IFE didn't work all the way to Las Vegas.
Okay, well, we'll call that shit then.
They couldn't figure out how to get it to work, but they gave me a bottle of champagne. So it's okay. That's a
reasonable.
And quite frankly, I don't rely on IFE on airplanes. So, I mean, that's a, but what I tend to find from a lot of people especially when I talk about Vegas from UK people, they really talk about that plane as shit because you have a lot of people in economy class, a few in World Traveler Plus, and those planes are really old. Those 747s are really old from Heathrow to Las Vegas. But recently, the phenomena from Gatwick on the 777s that are now all shiny and sparkly.
Yeah.
People have been really positive about them, like really, really, like these millennials. I don't know if you've heard of them. You know, I mean, they're sort of strange. Especially those like hipster millennials.
Hipster millennials, I get called that all the time.
So, yeah. But you know, they're like, I flew on BA, you know, and you're like, wow, from Gatwick, this plane was so cool. And like, it had like its great video screen and it had USB, but it was, I'm like, what do you mean it was cool? It's 10 across on a 777 in economy class. That's got to be like the worst configuration in the entire world. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. It was really nice. It was like much nicer than the other BA planes that I've been on. And that got me thinking. Wow.
Smoke and mirrors.
Wow.
Right? And so this is what it comes down to. And I agree with you. As someone who flies a lot and values my personal space a reasonable amount, reducing that sucks. At the same time, the average traveler just assumes that once I get on a plane, it's going to suck no matter what. So if you can distract me with a good IFE system, if you can make sure I have power so that my phone is working when I land. What's wrong, Leo? Sorry, the dog is...
Leo got in a hummus before
Now he's gnawing on his own foot. So maybe the hummus did something to him when we went to do my laundry in your kitchen. Thanks for that, by the way. It's an interesting sort of passenger experience dilemma. Those who know better would say people just want space, but those who know better may not always know better. And it turns out that you can distract passengers with decent IFE, throw Wi-Fi on board, and you know decent Wi-Fi, and people get even.
Seem to like the IFE.
Yeah.
They like the idea.
New
I don't
IFE
know if it's
good.
Because it's free or because it's there. But, you know, here's an interesting...
The new IFE is actually a good product.
But here's an interesting thing. Like, if you look at the 740, the old 747s from Heathrow. Now, we're talking premium cabin.
Yeah.
Well, if we're talking premium cabin, first, okay, whatever. But if we're talking business class, everyone's upper deck. And the upper deck, even though it might not be the newest configuration, it's still upper deck... Club,
yeah,
it's nice. It's 2-2. It's relatively decent.
You
it's
don't still have direct aisle access for everybody.
Yeah,
but
remember, most of these people are flying economy class. But what I find on the Vegas route, people love Virgin. You know why? And they call it. They're like, I sat in a bubble in economy class because they have that economy class section in the back.
The back
and they're like,
upstairs.
It was stunning. It was great. As long as you get a seat in a bubble on Virgin,
yeah.
I love Virgin from Heathrow to Vegas because I sat in a bubble and it was so nice
to
up there.
Fair, part of the problem of travel
and less staff
in general,
up there, more ratio.
Yeah,
you know.
Part of the problem of travel, and this is part of the problem of life, is everybody else. right? And it's a horrible thing to say, but like the problem with living is everybody else that happens to be around you in many ways. I just did Dallas to Sydney on the A380, and it wasn't full upstairs on Qantas. And as far as I'm concerned, there were 60 people on my plane. I never went downstairs. I boarded straight to the upper deck. There could have been 300, it could have been 200, 100 people. I have no idea how many seats were blocked downstairs, but they didn't matter. I've done it on Emirates where I flew into Dubai. I was going to Bangkok. You go to Connect. You go straight into the upper tier lounge, which is business class. It's literally a separate airport because there's that like separate deck of lounge for all of business class. You never notice that there's a whole different world of passengers on the other deck. Part of the problem of travel is literally the crowd and the chaos and the stress of everybody else around you. So instead of having 350 other people on this plane with you, you notice 50 other people on this plane with you. The other 300 are still there. You just don't happen to notice them. It really does change the stress levels. It changes. And BA did this on their A380s. They designed their 380s with multiple small cabins on the main deck. Mm-hmm. So the largest cabin is not even 100 passengers, I think. They split the lower deck up a lot. And they get the award
for the best forward lavatories on the A380 just space.
Okay.
Just like, so, I mean, literally you could have a menage, whatever the number 8 is.
Ocho.
But
that's for you, Rolo. We got Ocho Squares reference right here.
But you know what? The thing to me that hits me on that is perception. You know, Virgin is flying 747s from Heathrow to Vegas. BA is flying 747s from Heathrow to Vegas. On BA, unless you're in business class, you're not in the bubble, right?
And it is sexy to walk upstairs onto an airplane. You got to admit that.
Right. And they have that economy class section. Yeah. And people, I would say overall, and this is a very generalized statement, when I'm on the Facebook groups for, you know, UK Vegas people, they rave about flying on Virgin on these old 747s to Las Vegas, and they hate on flying BA. So there is a huge perception. But yet, on the other BA boards where they talk about flying from Gatwick on the new sparkly 777s, which have the IFE, people are happy about that. So, I mean, it's sort of interesting from an econ if you're just looking at the economy class experience. So either giving them that smaller cabin in the bubble, which they feel is more exclusive and nicer, or giving them a 777, even if it's 10 across, with nice IFE and USB. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the perceptions the consumers or the millennials are feeling.
Yeah. There's more to travel than just personal space, which bothers me because I like space, but I also get it. I mean, I like watching a movie while I'm on, especially westbound, but I like the movie. That's for me, actually, the irony is I care differently if it's a day flight or a night flight. I care about space more on night flights so I can sleep. I care more about the other things on a day flight. So,
but I think it's interesting because I think we lose sight of that sometimes because we're around so many premium cabin people. So, of course, the BA...
Even in the premium cabin, though, like the new Club World, and it's not new, but the version that Club World is new, the high J or whatever they're calling it now, like with the upgraded IFE system, it's the same seat, or it's the same-ish seat, right? It's still that weird sort of staggered, offset, nested, whatever you want to call it. It's not great. But on the East Coast to Europe flights, JFK or the Boston to London flights, or even Dulles, I sleep on that seat. I don't care that it's not direct aisle access, because the first thing I do when we take off is push the recline button, and the next thing I do is wake up on final approach.
Well, my usual statement to people on that, and this was the same on KLM on the 747s, which are also not direct aisle access on the upper deck. When you're flying from New York to Amsterdam, New York to London, my guy, you're a guy, how many times do you have to pee? Like, how often do you have to get up on a flight that's 6 hours? And if you need to get up that often on a flight, overnight flight that's 6 hours, you have a problem. I mean, it isn't that. I mean, I get it. I mean, I think next year it's going to be very interesting to see what BA does on the A350.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be anything extraordinary. I think it's going to be direct aisle access, but it is going to be...
It's going to match one of the existing products out there.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I got to loop back, though, how American got my bags finally to London.
On the same flight you were on?
No.
Oops.
So, of course, they got the bags to Boston, but American, I guess, decided that they had to send my bags back to London on American metal.
Oh.
So they sent them down via JFK. So my bags actually flew from Las Vegas to Charlotte to Boston to JFK to London.
Nice mileage run. Did I get the extra miles for that?
I'm still talking to American about that.
Damn, revenue-based earnings.
But I thought that was classic.
I believe it, though. Like, well, once they're delayed, like, okay, so it takes an extra 24 hours. Fuck you.
And then the final, the pièce de résistance, is I get an email So this was, I left on Friday, yeah, and the bags obviously started on Thursday. So I get a message very early in the morning on Sunday that my bags are in Heathrow, but I need to fill out the customs declaration. Because I don't know how many people realize this, but if you're international and your bags arrive international, they need you to fill out the declaration of what's in the bags, yeah, to do it, because you're not there for them to pull you aside at customs. So I filled it out. There actually happened to be
Do you fill it out when you're going through and declare them as lost, or you have to fill it out after the fact when they show up?
What happened is American Airlines Baggage Services sent me an email and saying, your bags are at Heathrow.
Because you were on a completely different itinerary.
Yeah.
So when we've had lost baggage international, we just declare it at the time, but they're lost and they're delayed. We're going to come back and pick them up later.
Here, I got an email basically from American saying...
They let you fill it out on a web page?
Yeah. Here, they basically sent me a form to fill out, a PDF form, yeah, to say, hey, we got your bags at Heathrow. It's 6 in the morning. We have your bags. Fill this form out. I filled it out immediately, you know, and said I have like 2 bottles of cognac people gave me as a present, and that's like all that's in the bags. Yeah, it was really nice, actually. And so I got it back to them. They acknowledged it. They acknowledged it by 8 o'clock in the morning. You know my distance from Heathrow...
I just did it. It was about 45 minutes in traffic in an Uber.
Right. So this is Sunday morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. They have everything they need. They say, it's fine. We're going to dispatch your bags to you. Needless to say, my bags got delivered at 11:40 p.m. on Sunday night.
Ouch.
Which was extremely irritating because I was exhausted on Sunday and had to wait up for my bags to finally be. So once again, we get into those little differences and those little problems. Something obviously went wrong with how they dispatched the bags, because there's no reason for them to get from Heathrow to Northwest London for to take from 8 in the morning to 11:50 at night.
Yeah, so, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's bad.
It's pretty embarrassing, actually.
Yeah.
But
so I'm going to tell you a fun Heathrow story. This happened to me today. I flew in today from Oslo, starting Oslo Heathrow Nassau ticket, because it was cheaper to go to Oslo first than just...
Oh, I figured that out immediately.
Can I get you to talk to the Oslo immigration official who really was considering denying me entry? He's like, this doesn't make any sense. What are you doing here? Even when I explained to him that it was a $2,000 cheaper on the ticket, he didn't believe me. Or he was skeptical. But so as I am wont to do, I post some stuff on Twitter and this and that. I posted a little video of the time lapse of like the last... what was 4 minutes of flight, but in 20 seconds, right? I tag Heathrow, I tag BA. It's a lovely little picture, lots of hashtags, yada, yada, yada. I'm staying at the Thistle, which is it's right off the edge of T5. It's like the first hotel on that northwest corner of the Heathrow properties. And there is a free bus that gets me there. There's a lot of options to get there. There's actually like the weird pod parking people mover thing.
Okay.
Goes to that hotel. So I'm taking that back in the morning, I think. But I said I was going to walk. So I was going to meet you, obviously, this afternoon, but I want to drop my bags off first. So I walked to the hotel. It's about 25 minutes. Good to stretch my legs, get some exercise, wake up, yada, yada, yada. About 20 minutes out, I take a picture and this and that. I'm walking along, though. All of a sudden, in this like random, quiet neighborhood on the north side of Heathrow Airport, the northwest corner, a car pulls up, like sort of speeds up next to me, pulls over, and I'm on the right side of the road, so I guess the driver pulled across to the wrong side. You drive on the right here or the left?
The other side. The wrong side.
I know, but I'm not a good driver, so I forget.
I don't drive here.
Yeah. But the guy pulls
right,
up.
It's the left.
They
drive on the left.
So he pulled across to the wrong
side. I should know that after a year and a half.
He pulls across to the wrong side of the road.
And by the way, I'm munching on food because we're on our second bottle of girl wine.
It's just rosé. It's not girl wine.
Okay.
It's delicious, quite frankly. But he pulls, cuts across and cuts me off sort of on the sidewalk. Rolls in and was like, hi, excuse me. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, are you Seth? I said, yes, but what? He's like, are you Seth? I said, yeah. He's like, hi, I know you. I follow you on Twitter, and I saw that you posted this video of landing, and I just I just wanted to come over and introduce myself. And the guy literally, he's a chauffeur. He's like, I'm a plane spotter and an nav geek and a chauffeur.
I love it.
And I'm just waiting for my next ride. I have he's waiting for his, fare to show up. Guy literally, and so I put it on Twitter. I'll post the picture in the show notes, too. This guy cut me off on the sidewalk. Asan Fifi, it's great to meet you in person. But this guy literally pulled over on the side of the road. Was like, hey, I know you. And this has happened to me a couple times in an airport lounge or an airport and this and that. But this is the first time it's happened to me randomly walking down the street in Greater London. So it was this absolutely bizarre experience. Like, yeah, I know you. And he pulled out his phone and shows me. He's like, this is you, right? And showed me the video that I had just posted. I'm like, yes, that is me. He's like, yeah, I follow you today. He knows. He's been following me for a while. It was hysterical, though. I had a random guy recognize me walking down the streets of... And why did I walk
that
today?
Means you're famous now, maybe.
Infamous, famous. Troublemaker.
In certain circles.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a completely ridiculous experience, and I loved every minute of it. But
combining that with the jet lag I'm currently undergoing, it was a little challenging.
You're not supposed to admit to jet lag.
I always admit to jet lag. It's my excuse.
Okay.
How else do I get to write off being an absolute idiot?
Yeah. Okay. It was good, though. I mean, I'll get you some pictures for the show notes, too.
Okay.
Because I am a little bit of a BA fanboy.
Yeah. Really? I hadn't noticed that about you.
Not really. Just a little bit. Well, we have that.
You
BA
were a little
group.
Bit of a Delta fanboy for a while there.
I was a Delta fanboy.
It's interesting to see that this transition has happened. I feel like it's relatively recent, too. Like a year ago when we had this conversation inside, I think we were drinking something else. We had the mixers out. We had the Caesars glasses. Is that right?
Yeah. We were doing bourbon.
Okay.
But this is just,
maybe I've suppressed that because I don't like bourbon. But it's interesting to me that you've converted that hardcore.
I have. I mean, I've found
that... Is it based on convenience and because you have BA here, or is it more than that?
It is truly based on convenience, but, you know, a couple of things that... I mean, if we want to talk about the things that BA is doing right,
yeah.
Like with First Wing at London Heath, if you live in London, if you fly out of T5
yeah.
a lot, which is for a lot of routes...
For a lot of people.
And even the stuff that they've done at Gatwick recently with... I mean, the T5 experience is beautiful
yeah.
now. I mean, First Wing, I mean... You are through security and dropped into
straight
the first
the
lounge.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking...
Flounge? How do we pronounce that?
Flounge, yeah.
Okay.
You're dropped... But, you know, you're talking 10 minutes from curb to lounge yeah. with security. And you don't have to look at all the duty-free stuff and all of that. And that's really good. Also, what BA's doing with other lounges, like Boston. I mean...
And the JFK rebuild is supposed to be similar. I've seen hints of such, but it's a work in progress.
Yeah, but also BA other lounges. Like, look, Rome... Rome has a new sparkly BA lounge, which...
Not the band there.
Yeah. So, I mean, but BA really is doing some investment in that experience. Now,
nice.
I do agree, so much of this has to do with the airports that you fly to.
Yeah.
And I happen to fly to Boston a lot, and BA owns Boston. I mean, on a Friday, they have 3 flights in the evening, unless one goes mechanical. But, you know, even there, look at the beauty of one goes mechanical.
Yeah.
They've got 3 flights,
that's
so it's not really
what, six,
a big
700,
situation.
800 seats, that's a
right.
lot of people.
And they have the morning flight from Boston.
That's right.
Which
so they do 1,000 seats a day.
Yeah, which is amazing. What do you have? You know, the Delta Virgin thing is totally a different
yeah.
kind of scenario. Virgin still has a dungeon lounge at Terminal E. They don't have one of the new lounges. And Delta has a Sky Club, and Delta has a 767, which is a really, 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 really old 767 to Heathrow.
Yeah.
And I have to say, and I go through this all the time. Yes, it's direct aisle access. I'm not the tallest guy in the world, but those Delta 767s, it's not even the coffin thing that people talk about so much. It's the storage. There is just nowhere to put your crap
yeah.
on that. I mean, the webbed baskets don't hold much. You wind up with tons of stuff on the floor, like in the
footwell. That little shoe drawer or whatever thing.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's just.
I'm thinking BA, not Delta. Sorry. BA has a little shoe drawer. Delta
yeah.
doesn't. Yeah, now Steven would certainly agree with you. I think last time we were here, he had just flown in on Delta on a 767. So he was pretty grumpy about that whole experience. So.
I mean, but they do have Wi-Fi.
Yes.
I mean, in Delta, it always has Wi-Fi, and it always works really nicely. So,
And to be fair, BA is coming along. The installations are happening. Not fast enough in my book, but I sort of expect that it'll all be done immediately every time an airline admits that they're going to do something. So,
well, and the other end of it, too, is, and I think we talked about this a little bit with Delta, economy class on a 767 is really nice.
Yeah.
Especially
232.
So your economy class experience
spacious.
Is actually better than your Delta One experience in a relative... No, not better than Delta
right,
One,
right.
but in a relative relative sense to other economy class
yes.
situations.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you in the relative proportional whatever.
And then we had the major Delta fail the last time I flew in March, which I caught and I gave to Gary, and he put it on View from the Wing
yeah.
and then was picked up by the Wall Street Journal, is that the pre-departure champagne was Andre. which Delta claims was a catering fail at Boston, but was absolutely hysterical.
Yeah,
and that doesn't happen at BA.
No.
Even in Boston.
You know, this morning I was leaving Oslo and had 20 minutes to dip into the lounge and grabbed a glass of champagne and some pretzels, and I tagged in that picture on Twitter. It was pretty bad. I should have taken a picture of the label. It was actually champagne, but it was pretty bad.
You see,
I stopped drinking. I'm like, well, I'm gonna have decent stuff to drink with Michael. So why would I hurt myself with this?
Yeah, that's true. And my pre-gaming was my run this morning. So
I just don't understand this running thing that you do.
But the other the thing of the soft product, hard product thing is always a very interesting argument.
Ooh.
And one of my things about American Airlines, at least I really tried hard to fly American Airlines first class. Yeah. I really wanted to in December. And then there was an operational problem and they put me on the flight from Miami to London on the A380 in BA. But I was supposed to fly Fort Lauderdale, Dallas to London in American Airlines first. But one of the things that I'm sort of critical about with American Airlines with regard to soft product is that they're not really making a bar differentiation in first class. You know, BA First, I mean, let's face it, BA First still has Johnny Walker Blue, has an XO Cognac, has decent scotch, has quite a few really good wines, though some of those wines come, you know, Americans better on a wine program and has the LPGS champagne. Yeah. American in first class doesn't differentiate. They don't really do that real big differentiation of their bar. And I don't understand why. Well, I mean, American has three planes with first class.
I was going to say, there's not enough planes, so it's a hard sell to sort of justify some of those expenses. But that's an interesting one to me. I've had the conversations with a number of airlines. And so you have that conversation with Emirates. Like, why do you invest so much in your booze in first class? You know, and the answer is sort of, these aren't things that the people flying first class, that our passengers would buy at home anyways. They're not trying to replicate a home experience, but at the same time, it's if we can spend an extra couple hundred bucks per plane to have these extra few bottles of whatever on board, they actually believe it drives the revenue. They think that that sort of ultra-premium wine, the ultra-premium liquor selection, drives a shift in market share. And at one point, airlines thought, Delta insists that offering Wi-Fi early shifted market share. I don't believe that. It at a level that justified the cost investment because it was never good enough anyways. This is, we're talking old original go-go, right? Like, there's a lot of those discussions. I'm skeptical on many levels about that, but Emirates has said they think that offering that ultra-premium liquor drives market share for their first-class product. And now it's a very small market to begin with, but it's a lucrative market. So it's interesting. And so, like you say, BA is doing it. BA is investing in that. American is not. I would say that the U.S. carriers have essentially given up on first class anyways because they don't want to be in the luxury game.
But BA still is doing it at what I consider a hyper-discounted version a lot of times.
Like, right, you mean the fares are cheap?
Yeah, I mean, comparatively...
Not fare versus product as well.
Yeah, okay. So let's say BA on a 747 has 14 seats in first. You know, luxury sale, they're luxury selling those flights to the States for £2,500, £2,600. Look at Lufthansa. Look at Air France.
Way
look at
expensive.
Swiss. You're lucky to get a sale with €4,000, €5,000, yeah. €6,000. So I sort of think BA is sort
fares,
of figure. Yeah, well, setting aside mistake fares, but I'm setting revenue fares.
What they meant to do.
I'm sort of thinking that BA saying, I think BA knows they don't have the best hard product,
yeah.
But they're offering it at a substantial discount. Like, try finding a La Première flight from Europe anytime during the year, which is not €5,000 or €6,000. And honestly, it is a different situation. And remember, if they're offering a £2,500 fare in first to the States, those fare buckets are open for upgrades from J to F. You know, if you're buying the discounted J to F. So to me, on BA, the two sweet spots on BA really are World Traveler Plus to J. Absolutely. You get a World Traveler Plus segment that's £400, £500, you know, $500, $600. You can upgrade that to J. Huge. Same thing from J, you know, same thing from J to F. So I think BA knows that that's what's going on, but they're filling the cap. I mean, on my flight to Vegas, the plane was not 100% full, but first was full.
Interesting. Yeah. So,
maybe they're sort of saying we're getting more, you know, we're getting a, because it's not a cheap fare, but we're sort of balancing that. Yeah. I'm not sure,
It's selling a really good business fare and giving some people the option for first out of it. Listen, I have loved my world. The last couple of years, I bought a lot of World Traveler Plus because from continental Europe back to the States, I would originate in Europe somewhere. To the States and then back, and I'd keep nesting them and keep finding opportunities.
And originating from Europe is the best.
Originating from Europe is cheaper, and you find, last year it was Germany. Germany was super cheap at one point. I bought like three or four at €500 each, and then I would upgrade the U.S. to London flight every time. Mm-hmm. I would, and I maybe one of them I couldn't.
And of course, you're from the New York market to London. There's so there so are lots of upgrade from. Of so lots of segments.
Usually I could find, and there was all the World Traveler was available to all of them. And so like the search
you
is hard
for the one.
So you have to go back and open a new browser and find the like which one has upgrade space available with the award space, and then you go book it, and then you call back, and you wait for the issues, and then you call back, and and you do it. But for the 15 or 20,000 Avios and $100 in extra taxes and fees, it's a no brainer.
Right.
You get.
But it's not the best business class in the world. But
for 6 hours, I sleep 4.5 of them, and I get my dining on the ground because at JFK, all JFK Dulles in Boston, they'll have dining now. But at JFK was my common one, and Newark has it too. I get my dining on the ground. I get on board, and as I said earlier in the episode, the first thing I do after we take off is push the recline button. The last thing I do on board is push the unrecline button, and that's
I'm never in between. Well, and the other thing is that, you know, as much as people give British Airways, you know, Jay a hard time, it's still good for 6 foot tall people. I mean, yeah. It's still
it's a long bed.
So, but then the question becomes, which is the total disconnect for me with American Airlines, is these damn flagship first dining things. When you have so little first class, and yet you have this exclusive first class experience at Miami,
yeah.
Which I got to experience only because I was reaccommodated on BA, and I went up and I had a couple hours, and the BA flight was delayed because there was weather in London, which meant there was an inch of snow. And the day before. Yeah. So and I went and I said, hey, look, I was on a Dallas flight and I was on AA Metal in first.
So you talked your way in.
I talked my way in. And I was the only person in flagship dining at Miami. It was I went into the lounge. I was like, what time do you want to dine? I said 8 o'clock is fine, because my flight was delayed till 2:30 in the morning.
Oof.
So we left from J at Miami, okay. Which was sort of an experience. But I went
yes it is.
But
it's
I went
getting better.
Yeah.
That's also in air quotes.
But I did that, and it was empty, and I'm like, wow, American has this flagship first amazing job. And they have a Miami have a Miami London flight, which is earlier at like 7, but that's not a lot of first class seats.
Right.
But I'm like, what the hell are they doing with this flagship first dining, I guess concierge key, but I'm like, it's because I understand with British Airways, with the Concorde room, you've got gold guest list and you've got a lot of first class seats, like tons of first class seats, but American doesn't.
Yeah.
So I just can't figure it out, like with American. And then what totally disconnects for me is that they're not doing the upgraded soft product on American Airlines first class. And yet they're doing a stellar situation with the flagship first dining. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, my whole experience, my pictures, I was like, wow, this is amazing. But so it's like disconnected to
me. Interesting. I did the new J lounge at JFK dining. It's the buffet, not flagship dining, but the new business lounge pre-flight dining experience. And I also have priority pass. I ended up going downstairs and eating at Bobby Vann's.
Because you got the dining credit.
I got the $28 and I cheated a little bit. I met a guy who was an American employee. And he couldn't eat or drink because he was working, but he had a 15-minute break or a 30-minute break, so he came down to hang out with me. The waiter gave me my plus one, so I had a $56 credit. So I had a chicken parm, two vodkas, and my buddy's coffee, and I still was underpriced. But even without that, with a $28 credit, I would eat at Bobby Vann's every time I were going to the lounge. I would go into the lounge, I would drink a glass or two of champagne, I would go back downstairs to eat food.
No, that's great.
And the food was okay. But it's also, and this is me judging other travelers a little bit, it's almost like they hadn't eaten in a week. You get people who show up and, like, attack a buffet like it's nobody's business. It's like, guys, it's just dinner. There's going to be food on the plane if you're still hungry. There's going to be food 8 hours or 12 hours from now when you land, wherever you happen to be. Have you really not eaten for 4 days in advance of this trip in hopes that the lounge food is going to be that tasty? They also have the problem of, like, at JFK, T8, peak departure time in the evening, it gets crowded and it gets chaotic because there's a bunch of long-haul flights that all depart at the same time. So, like, the lounge was a little bit of a shit show with, like, empty plates piled everywhere and things like that. But I actually, like, the lounge was fine. The food was just okay. I was happy to walk out of the lounge and eat somewhere else in the terminal. And this goes back to my comment, or I think I said
but
earlier.
But the Miami lounge...
If I'm willing to spend $20 or $50, like I said, yeah, I said at Nozzle, I spent $20 and got my meal instead of buying, you know, instead of being happy on club. I will spend $20 or $50 and be like much happier than, oh, but it was a free dinner. Especially if I get what I want and it's actually cooked like to order and it's the food that I was going for.
No, that's fine.
Sometimes, especially if you're quote unquote optimizing your overall travel experience, there's something to be said for saving money in the right places and spending a little bit of money to top it off and having the experience you want, as opposed to, oh, but it's free, so I better eat dinner here.
I agree absolutely. But that still doesn't, that disconnect with like Miami, where the flagship lounge is great and the flagship dining. And it's like very James Bond. Like they have a flagship dining room where they have to walk you over and like the door goes whoosh.
Do they have a key card to swipe in?
Yeah, I don't know. You can't get out. Like they have to like let you in. I mean, but I just am looking at this dining room and it's funny because one of the waiters said to me, we designed it to be like the Concord room. And I'm like laughing because the Concord dining, it has those booths, but it was better because they actually had power. Underneath, because that's one thing they didn't think of, even with the redo of the Concord room, is the power. But I was like so impressed by it, but I'm like, there's nobody in here, and I don't understand who's using it, because there's so little lift that is AA first from Miami, except I know Miami to London, and maybe there's a South America flight.
Probably one or two South Americas,
But it just was, and I guess Concierge Key gets it, right?
I don't know.
I thought they didn't, and then they did. But who? I mean, it's. But it was. I got to say, it's one of the most impressive facilities that I've been in.
Have you done a Polaris Lounge yet?
No, I don't. I make it a point not to fly on United.
Okay. The Polaris Lounge in Chicago. Since
I've heard really good things about
that. Now that they expanded it and got it fixed, I happened to go through there back in April or late March. I was impressed.
I heard Newark is really good.
Newark is now open. San Francisco is now open. They're finally delivering what they promised.
But explain to me, when you can use the Polaris Lounge where you're flying international
business class.
But if you're like 1K,
business class only.
And global services?
I believe business class only. So unlike Oneworld, Star Alliance does not have that third tier. So there's not the extra first class lounge-ish access thing. They've teased it. We talked about that. Faz and Steven talked about that in the last episode, and I wrote about it because I was at IATA when they were talking about it. But they're teasing maybe having a new tier.
I don't know
how they deliver a new tier without breaking the existing ones, but...
You know, the only reason why, and honestly, I joke about United. I have nothing really against United. Yeah, my problem is that they don't service Boston.
Yeah.
And Boston is one of my major cities, and it would be nonsensical when I have great... I mean, if I look at the situation with BA, with Boston, and then also... You know, Virgin. I like Virgin. Like Virgin on a 787 premium economy is great. And the two times I've flown premium economy to Boston, once connecting to JetBlue and walking over to Terminal C, which worked out fine. I mean, they've been empty premium economy cabins. And I just think that's a stunning product. And you can pay to get into the clubhouse. Like back then I was Diamond and I could get in, but you could pay an extra fee to get into clubhouse at Heathrow. So, I think Virgin, you know, blows away Delta as far as, you know, that's concerned, you know, from Heathrow. As much as I don't love Terminal 3 because it seems like a little bit like a hospital walking around the hallways there. Though the Cathay Lounge is really nice. But.
I've heard the new Cathay Lounge is very good. Really? I read that in your Facebook group all the time.
Yeah, it is good. It is really, really good. But my problem is that the overall experience at T5 with First Wing is just so phenomenal. But the clubhouse, I mean... The clubhouse, for lack of a better term, the clubhouse at Heathrow has swagger. You know, I mean, it's just a cool lounge. But Virgin to Boston is great. But I think during the summer, Virgin and Delta duplicate certain days, like both Delta and Virgin fly on certain days. But mostly the daily service from Boston is on Delta. And then Virgin's certain other days of the week. And during the summer, I think both Virgin and Delta have daily operating service. But it is all 787s on Virgin to Boston, I think.
Nice. And here's I like the 787 as long as you're not nine across coach. And going back to sort of the smoke and mirrors conversation we started in theory with, I think that was the theory.
Isn't Japan Airlines the only one that has eight across in economy class on the 787?
ANA might still have a few planes that do, but basically.
That's like a really good 780s.
Even at nine abreast on a 787, it comes down to who are you sitting with a little bit. I did it on Aeromexico and actually had a decent experience because it was the person next to me wasn't huge and they gave me a little extra leg room. And some people will say it's psychosomatic, some people will say it's all in my head, whatever. The higher pressure in the cabin and higher humidity actually makes a difference to me. I actually get terrible bloody noses flying. Which is awkward given how many thousands.
But not on a 787.
On a 787, I noticed that my nose is not as bloody.
I think the 787 is a great ride.
And honestly,
my thing about 333.
A humidity thing decides how dried out I get.
If you're with people you know.
Yes.
It's meant for the family of 2018 because it's the only child family. Because you can only afford to have one kid.
Right.
So you have one kid and you travel long haul. So it's all three of you. All three of you are together. So it's like you're all in your own space. And I'll give you one funny story to end this.
Yeah, we got to end this thing because like we've been talking way too long.
Yeah,
and
but
we're out of wine, so we're on.
Yeah, well, we have more wine, but
not out here with us.
But as you know, with my youngest, who's now 16, I traveled a lot with her,
yeah.
And she always traveled with me. As I told you before, the first time I ever flew to Asia was in my 40s, which most people don't believe. But you know, my wife was the one who always did all the travel, and I was home with the kids. And we flew on what's the Taiwanese version of it's China Airlines.
China Airlines is Taiwanese.
Okay. So from Amsterdam, there's a Fifth Freedom flight from Amsterdam to Bangkok, which is on China Airlines.
Yes, and because they can't, for a long time, they could not overfly mainland China.
Yes, so they fly to Bangkok and then it continues on to Taipei.
The routing goes west and south enough that they don't have to fly over mainland
China. So I'll finish this up really quick. So we went to Bangkok.
I like that.
We went to Bangkok on that flight because it was relatively inexpensive. Ryan was flying in from Boston. He was 18. It was his birthday. So he actually flew Boston, Amsterdam, and then he met us from Amsterdam to Bangkok, which was a hell of a day for him. And my oldest daughter had been in Amsterdam, my youngest daughter, and we had two of us in business class on China. Is it China Airlines?
China Airlines.
Yeah, and then I upgraded Ryan because it was his birthday. And so the two girls were in economy class on China Airlines. And my youngest daughter had never been in economy class on a long-haul flight before until that flight. And she was sitting with my oldest daughter in economy class, and they brought around beverages, and they brought them around, I think, in styrofoam cups and then in plastic cups. And she looked at my oldest daughter and goes, "What kind of shit airline is this that doesn't give glassware?" And my oldest daughter goes to her, "Honey, this is economy class." So I guess once we say it's all about perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. On that note, Michael, thank you very much for the wine, the little mini sausage things. Can you call them sausages if they're kosher?
They're Cubanos. Yeah, they're sausages, but they're just beef. Oh, those are
turkey.
Turkey, yeah.
They're delicious. They're gluten-free. Mm-hmm. Good to know. Thanks for the wine. Thanks for the meats. Thanks for the... We had vegetables too earlier, but, you know, whatever. Michael, you're travelzork.com. You're @_guy on Twitter. Is that
and right? Also @travelzork on Twitter.
Or travelzork on Twitter.
It depends if you want to talk to me personally or if you want to talk more travelzork.
I don't know. Who do I want to talk to? Am I talking to you or am I talking to the business?
I don't know. And then on Instagram, it's also @travelzork. So. And I am the admin and creator of the BA Executive Club Gold Plus Group, along with Michelle of Turning Left for Less on Facebook.
Who I barely missed in Dublin this week, and I'm terribly sad about that.
Exactly. She's a great lady. And in addition, I have a Zorkcast Facebook group. And that's about everything. Oh, Caviar Talk, too.
Oh.
That's the new Facebook group.
Growing the business. I like that.
Yeah, well, Caviar Talk. I figured we needed another Facebook group that was a caviar group, just since no one created
Are you Team
one.
Pringles or not Team Pringles?
I am not Team Pringles, because that's
insane. I think I'm getting thrown out of his house now. but I have to get my laundry out of your dryer before we do that. For the rest of us, you can find us @dotslines on Twitter, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us some feedback, rate us on iTunes, join the Patreon support group and give us money. Do one of those things. One of those things this week. Make that your goal. Anywho, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all soon. Take care. Safe travels.
Take care.